Okay, great. Welcome back to the. I think this is the 11th Rav Kook Shir that we that we've had in this forum, and we're sort of getting a little bit far afield from Rav Kook himself, mostly because I just wanted to finish the story of religious Zionism a little bit, as well as I understand it in the Rashi Prakim. So let me just situate ourselves in terms of where we're holding and what we're going to do today, and start off with some caveats. So we started a section of Rav Kook on Zionism. In order to do that, we did Rav Kook on the Kedushas Yisrael, Rav Kook on the importance of Am Yisrael, and Rav Kook on Eretz Yisrael, and then Rav Kook on a little bit about the return of Am Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael. And we saw that all of these concepts are super, super crucially important, cosmically important, according to Rav Kook. The notion of Kedushas Yisrael was something that was sort of sublimated in Galus, particularly the nationalistic elements were neglected and sublimated in Galus. Eretz Yisrael wasn't as emphasized. What happens when the people return to the land? That means the Geula is coming. That means we're going to have a religious revival, a spiritual revival. Nevuah is going to come back. Judaism is going to become this beautiful, holistic, spiritual, harmonious thing. They're all just going to love to do. And even when Rav Kook saw that the people returning to Eretz Yisrael didn't necessarily share that vision, he didn't budge. He had his interpretation that Hamisbeid Yerushalayim, first you build up the land physically, and then you build up the land spiritually. Now we saw last time how for Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, Rav Kook's son, after the state was established, even though there was a huge gap between what his father predicted was going to be the ideal state and what was actually on the ground, Rav Tzvi Yehuda also didn't budge. The concept of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael and the return and the fact that first you had the physical return and then the spiritual return, all of these things are front and center in Rav Tzvi Yehuda's thought. He talks about them a lot. He focuses mostly on Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. And we saw how the Six Day War really is almost not the culmination, but it's the fulfillment of a lot of these ideas in terms of what is supposed to happen. Am Yisrael is getting more land, and the land is becoming spiritualized. It's because there is a spiritual revolution. What happens going forward? What happens when you go from the Six-Day War to the Yom Kippur War, from the Yom Kippur War to the wars in Lebanon, to the First Intifada, the Second Intifada, to the Oslo Accords, to the disengagement from Gaza? What happens to this religious Zionist narrative? Parts of it are seemingly happen, and parts of it seemingly don't happen. So how do the believers in this, the interpreters of this, the people that are following Rav Kook's vision of the Tahalich HaGeula, what do they do with the material in front of them? So that's hopefully what we'll focus on today. So it may not be the most inspirational material. Not all of us may not necessarily believe in everything and all the assumptions that would go into Rav Kook's version of religious Zionism. But hopefully we'll see where different Rabbanim go when they're trying to deal with Rav Kook's vision and the reality that's in front of them. A major caveat is that I am not a major Bucky in contemporary religious Zionist thought. I've never done a full study. I'm not a sociologist. I don't really know the religious Zionist community outside of what I read and Ramat Beit Shemesh, which is not, you know, the bastion of Israeli religious Zionism. I don't even have access to so many books anymore. When I was in NYU, the NYU library would get every new book from everybody that was ever written. So I would always, you know, I would try to like to leaf through things. Now I have to buy books. I'm much less motivated to do so, and so I'm not really holding it contemporarily. But with that caveat, I'm not a sociologist. I don't have any particular expertise. But I think once you have the basics down, you can sort of see what people do, what strands they pick up on, and what strands they want to emphasize. And there are ramifications, halakha l'maisa. Again, I don't know if this is exactly what they're teaching our kids in school. I don't know if this is really where the religious Zionist community is at, that they're handling and discussing these particular set of ideas. But at least the people that really care about them, they are discussing this particular set of ideas. And some of these people are really, really mashpia on the community and on maybe Israel more broadly. So first, feel free to comment and chime in as we go on, but let's start the story a little bit earlier. So the first major bump in the road after the Six-Day War, let's say, is the Yom Kippur War. Yom Kippur War, Israel was taken off guard, you know, both in Syria and in Egypt. They conquered a lot of territory. They almost hit Tel Aviv, and then there was this nearly miraculous return or turnaround where Israel ended up at the gates of Damascus, right? Mamash at the gates of Damascus. So this shook a lot of the confidence of Israel as a whole and of the religious Zionist community in particular. And it was Darius Hasbeir. People wanted to know, like, what are we supposed to do with this? Six-day war makes sense in terms of this narrative. What about the Yom Kippur War? So of all people to write about this, one of the most prominent people was actually Rabbi Yehuda Amital. Rabbi Yehuda Amital was a reshiva of Yeshivat Har Etzion. He survived the Holocaust. He grew up in pre-war Europe. He's Romanian originally, I think. He was in a labor camp during the Holocaust. He said that one of the things that got him through it was reading Rav Kook's early published material. He made his way to Israel immediately after the war. He learned in Chevron. He became a Talmud of Yaakov Moshe Harlap, who was one of the Rav Kook's major Talmidim. And he fought or was a rabbi for soldiers during the Independence War. After the Six Day War, he's invited basically to set up a yeshiva in Gush Etzion, which is Yeshivat Har Etzion. And Amital was mostly known nowadays as being more left wing. He ended up starting a left wing political party. He joined the Paris government. After Rabin was assassinated. But at this time, he is fully situated in this religious Zionist community, in this messianic narrative. And you could see it. He wrote a kuntres called Hama'alot Mima'amakim. That's the title of it, and it's the subtitle something about explaining the Yom Kippur War. So this is one paragraph of I think it's a 50, 60 page kuntres. So it's but I think it's in 1974, 75. It's pretty soon after the war, I think. It's free online on the VBM and the Gush's website. So if you just take Hama'alot Mima'amakim in Hebrew, or take a line from this text and Google it, you will get the whole text. Rav Amital says as follows: Asur l'stakel milchama zot k'derek shisakano atzaros b'nei galus. You can't look at Yom Kippur War in the same way we look at sorrows that occurred to Am Yisrael during the galus. Alinu l'rot et goldah hashah. We have to see the greatness of our time period. B'mimana tanachit shala. This is biblical. What's happening now is of biblical proportions. V'yichulah l'rot rak l'vavas b'charaya b'shichit. You can only understand what's happening through a messianic lens. Im chuzrim v'noshmim acharei alpayim shnot galut avira tanachit. If we are really breathing, no Tanakh, we're reliving Tanakh after 2,000 years of Galus, Hadavar Epshiri Rak Mitoch Orosh HaMashiach, because we know this is the messianic process. Again, the Rav Amital that I encountered when I was in Gush had sang a very, very different tune. When he was talking about the state of Israel, when he was talking about the Talich HaGeula, when he was talking about land and wars and things of that sort, Something shifted in his thoughts during the 80s, during the first Lebanon War. But here he is fully, fully messianic. If I understand correctly, one of the first Yom HaTzimut in Yeshivat Har Etzion, in the Gush, he basically held up a Tanakh and said, if you don't think there's any connection between what is happening, what happened to us, and this book, you may as well just throw the book in the garbage. So if the only way you can understand Yom Kippur War is not just, oh, they attacked us, oh, there were more pogroms, there were more tsaros, this is classic anti-Semitism, but something biblical is happening, something Mashiachi is happening, so what is it? So he says as follows. He has a whole long chapter of this. Shloshet ha-tavarim ha-ladu, he-mechama sheba al-rekat tumat Yisrael. What is biblical? What is messianic about the Yom Kippur War? Number one, it is a war about the establishment of the State of Israel. The fact that the war was universal, that included America and Russia and the Soviet Union, it wasn't just Jews versus Syrians and Jews versus Egyptians, it included the superpowers of the time. And also the proportions of the amazing victory we had in the end. The fact that it started Yom Kippur, it's like if you understand what's going on, the fact that the war was about the establishment of the State of Israel, that war never ended. The fact that the war included the superpowers, like Tanakh describes, the wars of Gog and Magog are going to include the superpowers of the world. And the fact that we had an amazing reversal and we ended up winning the war in such an amazing fashion, that means this war is of biblical proportions. It is a part of the Tadlich HaGeula. And the question is, so how does it fit? How does it fit into the narrative? How does it fit into the process? Nish'al. The Shema Ba'Machamazot. What is the purpose of this war? Why did Hashem make us have this war? Mayish Lechosh. What is there to conquer? The Shema Ba'Machamat Gog Magog. The Shema Mevim Arzot. Lo Yidu it. Rechokot Mitzafon. Leman Kibush Aretz. Why in the questions are transitioning from questions about this war that just occurred to questions about Tanakh. Why in Tanakh is there a description of Gog Magog coming from faraway lands to attack Eretz Israel? So what's the purpose of this war? Again, if you are a Rav Soloveitchik Jew, purpose of the war, we have no idea what the purpose of the war is, but we know when the war happens, you have to do tshuva, you have to daven. But the purpose of it, how is it advancing the messianic narrative, the messianic process, is not a question you're supposed to be thinking about. So what is Rabbi Mittal is thinking about this question? What is his answer? After the state of Israel was established and we got back the biblical borders, we had the Six-Day War, there could only be one more purpose of war. We have to become more purified. We have to become more pristine. We have to become more Jewish. Medinat Yisrael has to live up to its full potential. We have to be shaken up in order to, Letzaref is to purge, is to burn out the impurities to create pure metal. And we were freaked out. The war, we almost lost. After a while, after a war like this, people are going to start asking about their own self-identity. Where does our strength come from? We almost lost. Other nations are against us. We're going to gather into ourselves. How do we know that Medinat Yisrael is still going to be here 20, 30, 40 years down the line if this war didn't really resolve anything? The purpose of wars after the Six-Day War is, at least this war, is in order to help us understand why we came back to the land, what the purpose of Medinat Yisrael is, and what is the destiny of Am Yisrael. Without a war, you could just think you're a nation like other nations. So you see, you have a sort of a bump in the process. The Six-Day War should have been the last war. You get everything back. There should have been a spiritual revival. That didn't necessarily happen in the way it was predicted. The Yom Kippur War is a bump in the process, and then but Rav Amital has a pshat. The pshat is it helps us try to understand why we're here, which is going to help with the spiritual revival that's supposed to take place in Medinat Yisrael. Good.
So what is the tam v'sevel hayyudi?
It's the fact that Jews are different. The fact that Hashem chose us in order to be an Am HaNifchar, and we have to create a state that's not just a state like other states, a state that represents the Torah values. I guess. I mean.
Which sevel is suffering, right?
Sevel suffering, yeah.
The reason,
my guess, I don't remember what he says afterwards, if he answers that question directly, the reason for the suffering is because Jews are different, because we're the Am HaNifchar. What is the connection between being an Am HaNifchar and anti-Semitism? I think there are Discovery seminars galore about this. You could go to Google it. I'm sure there you get all the pshatim they have. But there's some connection between being the Am HaNifchar and Jewish suffering and anti-Semitism. And the lack of the ability for the other nations around Israel to accept the fact that Medinat Yisrael was reestablished. It's not just political, it's not about land, it's not about Islam, it's about Jews. And that's supposed to make us rethink about why we're here in the first place, and that's hopefully it will allow us to start the process of creating the type of state that Hashem actually wants, which is going to bring in the Messianic era in reality. I'm sure there is much more to be said and much more written about this, but this is one, you could see, a model of how you deal with bumps in the road. What I want to move, I want to fast forward a little bit to the disengagement from Gaza. Because, why disengagement from Gaza? Mostly because it's a part of the bumps in the road that I'm most familiar with. I was in Israel in 2005 when it happened. It was between my Shana Ben and Shana Gimel. I spent my Shana Bet jumping around different yeshivas a little bit, so I got it from a Gush perspective. I was in Merkaz Ra for a couple of sikhot. I was in Yerucham for a while for a little bit. I heard a little bit of the rhetoric of what was going on in different places, and I was very involved as a 19-year-old American could be with Hafganot. I went to a bunch of Hafganot. I got myself arrested at some point, which is pretty cool. I figured after I got arrested, I may as well just make Aliyah, because I don't think that's it. But everybody around me was getting arrested at some point. And I had a chavrus that got arrested, I had a bunch of other people got arrested. But that was the thing to do. If you protest in the wrong spot, they basically arrested you. I mean, what does it mean to arrest me? They put me on an army van for maybe 6-7 hours. And then they said there was no space in the jails in the local area. So they had an army a police car, like, escort us back to the borders. This was when the Pinoy was happening, when the disengagement was actually happening from Gaza, that they closed off the area for civilians' cars. They didn't want civilians to go in. So I was in a car that sort of like was mistamen. It got past the first two of the army barriers, and we got caught between the second and third one, I think. And then we were escorted back. That's on some later point. So I ended up doing a bunch of readings about the disengagement, because it was a little bit personal at the time. What I want to do is basically a reaction to the disengagement, and then seeing how are you supposed to act when the disengagement is happening as a test case for Rav Kook's ideology in real time. So first of all, there was at least some type of mashbir. There was some type of crisis in the religious Zionist community about the disengagement. Again, just to make sure we're all on the same page. Basically, disengagement is from Gaza. No, the Israeli government sent Jews to Gaza to settle there. It's called Gush Katif. At some point, Ariel Sharon decided that when he was prime minister, that it wasn't a good idea to have 10,000 Jews surrounded by like 1.5 to 2 million Arabs that didn't want them there. It wasn't worth it for the army, it wasn't worth it for the country, and they unilaterally took the Jews out. So there were some people who were part of the religious Zionist community that stopped saying Halal Yom HaTzma'at and stopped saying it's Tefillah L'Shalom HaMedina. One such person, maybe the most prominent of them, was Rav Shmuel Tal, who had a yeshiva in Gush Katif, in the Beit HaKavim. His yeshiva moved to Yad Binyamin. He ended up becoming a little bit of a controversial figure a little bit afterwards. You could Google that if you want. But at the time, he was like really like, he's a huge, huge genius. And he had a following. And he and his yeshiva stopped saying halal on Yom HaTzmut. This wasn't the mainstream reaction in the religious Zionist community. There are dozens and dozens of reactions to this, but I just give you one that when I started Googling, Israel Rosen, who was the head of Tzomet, the Tzomet Institute. So he has an article responding to this. He writes as follows. Mimatay anachnu machtivim, this is our second source. Mimatay anachnu machtivim l'Rabbeinu Shalom et malachav. We believe Gula, this is the process of Gula. How are we supposed to dictate to Hashem what's going to happen? When what Hashem does is not proper in our eyes, shover mitakelim, we just walk away. The fact that the state of Israel was established is a messianic marker, a redemptive marker, even according to Shmuel Tal. And there are tens of thousands, millions of Jews that came back. We resettled the land that was desolate. And we survived. We fought against the other nations that surrounded us, and we succeeded. All of these things are Geula-oriented. If one thing happened that we did to ourselves that is not in line with that story, that doesn't mean we have to throw away the whole story. The Mishnat HaRav Shmuel Tal Pag Tokva Shal Itzchalta De Geula B'Kayetz Tavshin Samachay 2005 B'Girish but it's clearly not true. The story as a whole is generally going in the right direction. If bad things happen, those are bumps in the road. Bumps in the road are to be expected. I was in Merkaz Harav for the Yom HaTzmut after the Pinoy from Gush Katif, 2006, and I don't remember, it was every speech or almost every speech, and there were a lot of speeches. They're all about this point, that the same way that after Hashem sent Moshe to tell Bnei Yisrael that you're going to redeem the Jewish people, it got worse first, and only afterwards it got better, there are going to be bumps in the road. There's a Tadech HaGula, you know, Kimei Tzei Tzachal Meir, Tzayim Arano Niflos. We're in a process of Gula similar to leaving Mitzrayim. The same way there are bumps in the road then, there are going to be bumps in the road now, and it's to be expected, but don't throw away the whole narrative, because narrative as a whole is still true. This is exactly yes. So I don't want to go there, but this is the problem with ideologies in general. Once you firmly believe it, you have to have a ton of evidence against you, or you can always re-explain it. I mean, that's what happened with Rabbi Yehuda and the Holocaust. Meaning if Cook has this optimistic picture of what's gonna happen going forward, the Holocaust happens. It's pretty horrible. So if Yehuda has to come up with a pshat. it's unfalsifiable. It was once you have the narrative and you believe that it's true, and here you have evidence that it's true. Look, we're back. You know, the state of Israel is flourishing, and flourishing in so many ways. No other nation has done this, to come back to its ancestral homeland, to reestablish a language, to reestablish Torah and yeshivos. All these things have never happened in human history before. So there is certainly evidence going for it. But you're right. I don't know if any evidence would ever unconvince somebody that's convinced of this. It's unfalsifiable. It's not scientific. It's a belief. Good. What I want to focus on for the next 20 minutes or so is using the Gush Katif as a test case for the unraveling, so to speak, of different strands in Rav Kook's thoughts. Because for Rav Kook, what's going on? You have Am Yisrael. You have Eretz Yisrael. For Rav Tzvi Yehuda, Am Yisrael gets concretized in Medinat Yisrael. You have a redemptive process. You have a spiritual revival. All of these things are supposed to come together. And for Rav Kook, they're all supposed to develop together. What happens when the Jewish government that was democratically elected kicks Jews out of Eretz Yisrael? The process of Am Yisrael becoming stronger and having a government is supposed to come hand in hand with the settlement of the land. Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael are two sides of the same coin. And all that is supposed to come together, eventually at least, with some type of spiritual revival. What happens with the disengagement? You have the government, which may or may not represent the nation, removing Jews from Eretz Yisrael and actively giving parts of Eretz Yisrael back to the Arabs. So how do you conceptualize that if you are a Talmud of Rav Kook, where all of these things are supposed to come together? Do you chuck the government? Do you chuck Am Yisrael? Do you chuck Eretz Yisrael? Like, what? There's a conflict between the strands of Rav Kook's thought that are all bundled up. And for Tzvi Yehuda, it's not just Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, it's Am Yisrael as exemplified by the state. The state is the Hitzkamut, is the embodiment of the people. So what happens when the state, which is the embodiment of the people, removes Jews from Eretz Yisrael and gives that land back to the Arabs? So what are you supposed to do with that? So I do think you could find different strands of thought, and you could really see, once things start breaking down, you can really see what different people think is the main legacy of Rav Kook. Because Rav Kook is a religious Zionist. Religious Zionism believes in A, B, and Z, but Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael, Torah Yisrael, and all these things come together. But once they start breaking apart, you could see different people gravitating towards different strands, and you could see what is the main legacy of Rav Kook, or what is the main thing happening in our time period, and that becomes the primary thing. Other things become secondary. Even a secondary is going to be a very, very high secondary. So let's start with Rav Tzvi Tao. Rav Tzvi Tao is currently the Nasi and Rosh Yeshiva. I'm not sure if his title is officially Rosh Yeshiva. It's Nasi HaYeshiva, the founder of Har HaMor. Har HaMor is a huge yeshiva in Yerushalayim. He was Rav Tzvi Yehuda's right, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook's right-hand man. He was born in Vienna pre-World War II. He survived the war as a baby and young child, hiding, I think, in Holland, somewhere in Amsterdam or a bunch of different cities. He grew up in Amsterdam, went to a public school there. He came to Israel, I think, age 16, age 17 by himself. He actually learned by Rav Mital for a year, and then he went to Merkaz Harav and he became a Talmud Mufak of Rav Tzvi Yehuda. Rav Tzvi Yehuda basically appointed him to give Makshava Shirim in Merkaz Harav. He was like giving Makshava Shirim, giving Gemara Shirim for a little bit of time, but mostly after a year or two, he started only giving Makshava Shirim. And then when Rav Tzvi Yehuda passed away, and Avram Shapira was appointed to be the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Tzvi Tao was there giving Makshava Shirim. Rav Tao did not necessarily like the direction Merkaz Harav was going in, and there was a split in the early 90s. And now there are two yeshivos that both claim to be heirs of Merkaz Harav. There is the original Merkaz Harav, which is in Kiryat Moshe, and there is Har HaMor, which is in, where is it now? No, it's not Har Bracha. It's in somewhere in Yerushalayim. I think it's in Kiryat Yovel. Originally it was in Bayit Vegan. I visited it when it was like in a very small place in Bayit Vegan, and then I think it's now in a huge building in Kiryat Yovel. When they talk about Yeshivot Hakav, the yeshivot of the line, it's Har HaMor and those yeshivos that are satellite yeshivos of him. Rav Tao is the spiritual leader of Mefleget Noam, of the Noam political party, which has one member of Knesset currently in the Knesset, Avi Moz. But some of his Talmidim are in Rav Eli Sadan, who started the Mechina in Eli. It's the largest, I think it's the largest Mechina, it's the first Mechina, was a Talmud of his. There are many people that are Messianites, still Messianites with him, Adi Yom Hazeh. Rav Tzvi Tal holds of a concept called Mamachtiyot. Mamachtiyot means different things in different contexts. In the religious Zionist context, it means believing that the Malchus, the state, and the state's institutions, and the state's figures, and the state's figureheads have inherent kedusha, have inherent importance, no matter which people actually occupy those positions, and almost no matter what the state is actually doing. In 2006, I think it was, Rav Tal published a book called Solu HaMesila, Chart the Path, and the subtitle is something about Torat HaTzibur, according to Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook. This was a series of sichot that he gave about how to decide things on an Am Yisrael level, according to Rav Tzvi Yehuda. It was published, I think, 1 year after the disengagement. So the speeches were given at different times, but clearly this was the context. So he writes as follows. Again, I'm taking out individual lines from a 100-page book, but I think these lines are some of the key lines. Achidosh HaGadol, I'm skipping source 3. Achidosh HaGadol sh'nitzchasha b'dorot achronim, the biggest chiddush that occurred in the previous generations, hakodin b'ma'ala l'chol mifal ha'adir ha'tzionut, which is more important than the entire Zionist enterprise, shel binyon v'atikuma, of rebuilding the land and the revival. Who? What is the most important thing that occurred in the last 100 years? Hu sh'nolad b'leiv ha'monim, ratzon chayim tivi, oz l'chiyot ka'am ka'medina. And of all the things Rav Kook discussed, and of all the things that occurred, what is the most important part of this talich? The movement from being a prat, from being an individual in Galus, to being a nation, to living as a state. Shava v'chazra ilinu ha-todza'ah ha-lumit, to the national consciousness has returned to us. Todza'ah ha-muledet v'todza'at ha-aretz, which includes a heritage, a homeland, and a land. B'tkufat matenu zot shalaketz megula kedvar Hashem holakad mitzgalel mitzbatalet mitzmitzmitzbaletet mitzchalalet yotzer v'yotzer surat am shalanu. This is a quote from Rav Tzvi Yehuda. In this time period of ketz megula, of the end of times, of the end of times being revealed to us, what is most mitzbalet mitzchalal? What is most prominent and most being advanced? It is surat am shalanu. It is the national life. B'chayi ruach v'maaseh, in the spiritual life and the practical life. V'kodesh v'chol, b'dozatino ha'ishit v'chavratit, m'tiyotino nafshit v'chamit, v'panimit v'chitzonit. That is the most important thing that is happening. If that is the most important thing that's happening, you know, of course, Eretz Yisrael is important. Of course, you're going to try to convince the state to not fight against Eretz Yisrael, to not give the land back to the Arabs. But push comes to shove, are you going to fight against the government? Are you going to fight against your own soldiers? Are you going to engage in civil disobedience? Are you, if you're a soldier, are you going to be Mesarev Pekuda? Are you going to try to convince other soldiers to refuse orders? The answer ultimately, at least in 2005, the answer ultimately was no. Because the state is Am Yisrael. The state represents Am Yisrael. The will of Am Yisrael might be erratic, and Am Yisrael may not be doing the right thing. But the fact that the state exists and the state is something which is the embodiment of Am Yisrael, and that is the most important thing that's happened in the last 100 years. So in the end of the day, you can't throw away the state. The yeshuv in Gush Katif, that there was no violent protests. There was very few, or if any, violent interactions between soldiers and policemen who were doing the pinoy and the people in Gush Katif that were being carried out. It was all passive. They were carried out. And the yeshuv that was under the leadership of Rav Tal, they fought. They protested to the last minute. No, they protested. They governed. They lobbied. They did everything. They lived life normally as if the pinoy wasn't going to happen. The moment the army came to their yeshuv, they danced out with the soldiers. Because if this is what Am Yisrael wants, this is what Am Yisrael wants, this is what we have to go with. It's the wrong thing to do. It's an avir. It's horrible. You have to fight against it as much as possible until the time when it happens. Once it's happening, this is what the state wants, this is what Am Yisrael wants, and we're going to go for it. Not we're going to go for it. We're not going to actively fight against it. Look a little bit later in the same book. Solo Masila. There's a passage in Yerushalmi that says that whenever there's an activity or an institution that has both a Kiddush Hashem and a Chilul Hashem, the Kiddush Hashem side always outweighs the Chilul Hashem side. So based on this principle, Tzvida taught us to relate properly to the leaders of the government. That are always doing strange things. And that the Tzvida constantly warned us, told us, Israel, that the Jewish government, even with all of its flaws, he le'es ata hitzgalut shel Knesset Yisrael. That's a fascinating statement. What is the hitzgalut of Knesset Yisrael? If you had a point, where is Am Yisrael embodied? What represents Am Yisrael? If you're a religious person, you're like, I don't know, the Beis Medrash, the people who go to shul, the people who do chesed, the chesed organizations. For Avtau, what is the ultimate representation of Am Yisrael? The Knesset. Who votes for the Knesset? Am Yisrael. So even though the people might do very strange things, and they might make a lot of mistakes, and they may not be, in terms of their personal character, may not necessarily be the best Jews possible, the fact there is a government is the Hitzgalut Shel Knesset Yisrael. It's a pretty interesting shita. Again, it's totally foreign. Sounds totally strange that a political vote should define what is the Hitzgalut of Knesset Yisrael. But that is, you see where it's coming from if you follow the line of thought from Rav Kook down to Rav Tzvida Kook down to Rav Tao.
It's not so different than the Rambam,
Smicha. That's right. That's right. That's Rabbanim though. That's Talmidei Chachamim.
No, it's Kol Yisrael.
No, Kol Yisrael. Yeah, Kol Yisrael means, but the people who are the leaders are
Im
Chachmei Yisrael. Exactly. But it's never like. You know, and let's say BB does a better job at campaigning or worse job at campaigning, and therefore the people vote for a certain party versus another party. It's like, you know, it's we're talking about things that you would think were under the realm of political strategy, but they have cosmic ramifications according to this approach. It makes sense that the Sanhedrin represents the will of Am Yisrael, but ultimately it's not the Sanhedrin is not democratically elected. The Sanhedrin is appointed by the previous Sanhedrin. The people need to agree, they have to concede that these people are right to be there. But it's not like a democratic election based on TV campaign ads and, you know, and bad-mouthing other people and things like that. That's why, for Avtau, the only illegitimate government is the government that rests on Arab parties. Because that's not a hitzgalut of Am Yisrael. Because you need the Arab parties there in order for the government to stand. That is an illegitimate government. And that's why the previous government, from the perspective of a Mefleg at Noam and the people that believe in this, was an illegitimate government. Because they lied to their voters, et cetera, but also because it rested on Ram, on an Arab party. So the whole point of the government is to embody Am Yisrael, but you're actively inviting the Arab parties to be part of the coalition that can't represent Am Yisrael anymore. It's like a metaphysical thing. It's not just a practical thing. And then he goes on. He tells a story that Tzvi Yehuda was once in the library in Merkaz Rav, and somebody came in and was all upset about something the government did, and he was very harif about the Rosh Hashanah, whoever was at the time. And Tzvi Yehuda was silent. And then look at the last line of this paragraph. After this person left, Rav Tal says, Rav Tzvi Yehuda told me, the Amar, and Yikach lo yechol daber al Rosh Hashanah. I can never speak about the Rosh Hashanah that way. B'shvili Rosh Hashanah b'Yisrael hu bitui shel kiddush Hashem shebetikumas klal Yisrael. The Rosh Hashanah is the representation of the kiddush Hashem, of the revival of the Jewish nation, of this todzah of the umit. So push comes to shove, you can't throw away your affiliation with the government. You could try to change the kivun of the government, try to change the kivun of the nation. That's why Mefleg Noam is all about Zehut Yehudit. That is their first platform. Zehut Yehudit, that's what they want. They want to reinstate the Jewish character of the country. That's also why, if you go on to Mefleg Noam's website, one of the major tabs is Handasat Toda'ah, which means engineering of consciousness. Avi Ma'oz has given, they're a member of Knesset, has given, I think, 90 speeches in the Knesset about how a small group of left-wing elites and foreign players have been trying to change the consciousness of Am Yisrael in Eretz Israel and convince them that certain things are right and confuse them about the reason why they're here. It's called Handasat Toda'ah. Like you're engineering, it's like a brainwashing almost. You're engineering consciousness. Why is that so important for them? Why is it so important for Avi Ma'oz and Mefleg Noam? Because Am Yisrael is good. Am Yisrael has a good ratzon. They know why they're here. Amcha knows why they're here. So why is Amcha not part of Haramor? Why is Amcha voting for center left parties? Because they're being misled by people on the top, by left wing elites that have a lot of money and have a lot of social capital, who are engineering a certain consciousness in the country. And Avi Maoz's purpose in the Knesset partially is to point this out. Hantasat Todah. It's a political thing, but it's also an ideological thing. Good. Let's shift over now from Rav Tzvi Tal to another very, very prominent Talmud, Rav Tzvi Yehuda, who's also still alive, Rav Dov Lior. Rav Dov Lior is the Rav of Kiryat Arba. I think he recently retired, but he was a Talmud of Rav Tzvi Yehuda. I think he also survived the Holocaust. I think he was also born in pre-war Europe. Maybe he came over right before. These people are in their 80s. I think Rav Tal was 85. Rav Dov Lior, I think is in his high 80s. He is a huge Talmud Chacham. He's a major posek in the religious Zionist community. Major Talmud of Rav Tzvi Yehuda, and he is an establishment figure in Kiryat Arba Chevron world since forever. He was asked the following question. This is Tavshin Samech Vav. This is a year after this engagement. She'ela. Hayim hayinu tzrikim levater al avat Yisrael b'shvil Eretz Yisrael? Should we have given up on Avas Yisrael for the sake of Eretz Yisrael? Like to block roads, like people are doing today, and to refuse orders. Or is Avas Yisrael more important? So there are two things over here. What is the question about? It's like we're against the Pinoy from Gush Katif, against the Hitnakot. Should we engage in civil disobedience? Now, should we have had engaged in civil disobedience, blocking roads, refusing orders, things like that? How is the question phrased? It's not like, oh, should I be concerned that there's going to be an ambulance, that somebody has to get to their job, they're not going to be able to get to their job. If there's an ambulance trying to get through, they're not going to be able to get through. I'm sure those are factors. But the way the question is phrased is that there are two values. There's Avas Israel, there's Am Yisrael, and there is Eretz Israel. And they're in conflict with each other. Which one is more important? It's such an amazing way of phrasing the question. You see where it's coming from. What's Rav Dov Lior's answer? Tshuva, Avas Yisrael? Mezah Baal Cheshvan Ava. What is this? It's not Avas Yisrael. Ani Choshev is a chelek mesitra akra. The fact that you think that Avas Yisrael will tell you not to be engaged in civil disobedience, that is a sitra akra. Shemenasele tashtesh et kosher amidah shalenu mo harishos. That the fact, oh, Rav Kook spoke about Avas Yisrael, we shall all be lovey-dovey and I have achtos, and therefore we shouldn't engage in civil disobedience, and we shouldn't be chosim kvishem, we shouldn't do things like that. That is the sitra achra that's being metashtesh, that's blurring the lines of what's actually going on here. Rishis, anachnu tzrikim lagdir ha'im ma'aseh hazeh shel medina hu neged Torah Sinai Kedusha, alo neged Torah Sinai Kedusha, is the fact that they want to get rid of Gush Katif, is that halachically okay, halachically not okay? Rabban kotev, shelo nazvena b'yad zul tzina minubos olo shalama. Clearly, it's not okay. Here's the key line for us. V'gam Rav Kharlap, Rav Kharlap, Rav Kook's Talmud Mufak, Kosev shebedor shavanu hanikuda shel Eretz Yisrael he nikuda ikarit. V'yakom Moshe Kalab said, in our generation, what is the main nikuda? What is the main chiddush the last 100 years? Eretz Yisrael. The fact that we have the land. Kishan Medina rotsa l'kroa halakim Eretz Yisrael l'haglot yudim ibatayim he osa avira. Like, the Medina is wrong. Again, he goes on to clarify. I'm still going to say Hala on Yom Ha'atzmaut. I am still going to say Tzfilah L'Shalom HaMedina. But do I see the fact that the Medina is engaging in this activity, does that give it some sense of validity on high, and therefore I shouldn't fight against it? Absolutely not. He goes on to say that in terms of being Masari Pekuda, you have to figure it out. Meaning, is it going to ruin the army? Is it not going to ruin the army? That's a practical question. In terms of being chosem kvishim, in terms of civil disobedience, in terms of blocking roads, he's like, look, in this country, anybody who protests block roads. That's what they do. He said a couple years ago, the taxi drivers were on strike because they wanted more money, so they were chosem kvishim. So they're chosem kvishim. If they block roads, of course we should be blocking roads. And the fact that it's the Medina involved that's doing this, and the fact that we are actively putting ourselves in opposition to the army, in opposition to the police force, in opposition to what the Medina wants, that shouldn't bother us. Because then what is the main Nakuda in our generation? Eretz Yisrael. And push comes to shove, when Eretz Yisrael conflicts with Am Yisrael, which one do we have to side with? Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, in the end of it, there's a fascinating history over here. The, 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 there, there was a, um, you see the religious Zionist community wasn't able, they had hundreds of thousands of people come to these protests. There was a protest in Kfar Maimon, which is down south, very close to the entrance to Gush Katif. I'm forgetting how many hundreds of thousands of people they had in Kfar Maimon. There was a major decision whether or not they should go and walk into Gush Katif from there. This is already at the time when the army was blocking Gush Katif. Should they have 100,000 people march into Gush Katif? Or should they not put themselves in opposition, in conflict, with direct conflict with the army and the police? And the Muetzet Yesha, which was the political body involved, after consulting with mainstream Rabbanim in the religious Zionist community, like Rabbi Yaakov Ariel and of Rutschman, I think, and I'm forgetting who others, decided not to march into Gush Katif, just to have the protest in Kfar Maimon, to not put yourselves in direct opposition, direct conflict with the soldiers and with the police. Why? They said they didn't want to cause a civil war. But underlying it is a certain sense of mamachtiyot that is really there in the religious Zionist community. And you could see and therefore you don't want to go against the state. You don't want to go against the government, at least back then in 2005. I think the other reaction of this was no argavot, the people that just said, no, the Gush Katif has shown us the government is not to be trusted. We're going to go out and set up yeshuvim on our own. All the original yeshuvim were set up with government, not all of them, but many of them were set up with government supports. The whole point was to have the government behind it, was you need the Medina behind the settlements. They have all these pictures of Sharon and of different prime ministers there at the groundbreaking of different yeshuvim. The Noar Gavot today says, the government is, we can't trust them. They have no inherent Kedusha. We are going to just grab hilltops on our own without any government support. And they're setting themselves up in opposition to the army. The army are the ones that are being defined at these hilltops. Well, they are constantly trying to build. So WR wasn't totally there in terms of actively fighting against soldiers and the police, but in terms of from Rav Kook, Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, which one is the more important factor, so to speak, in the last 100 years? He's more siding with the Eretz, it sounds like at least, with the Eretz Yisrael side of things. Again, these are small snippets. I don't know how much you can generalize. WR has written voluminously. I haven't read half of it. Same thing with Tal, but I do think you could see the unraveling, so to speak, of these strands, which for Rav Kook really came together. A third, and for tonight, final way of making sense of this is again, it's not just Rav Shagar, but Rav Shagar was one person that said this explicitly. Rav Shagar was not a Talmud of Tzvi Yehuda. He was younger than Rav, significantly younger than Rav Tal and Rav Dov Lior. He passed away in his 50s, and he was from cancer, I think, in 2010, like relatively recently. But he's somebody that, based on his age, should be alive and well and living among us. He's known for a bunch of different things, but what's relevant for us now is that he is sort of half diagnosing and half prescribing the infusion of Hasidus and dancing and spirituality and music and things like that into the religious Zionist community. He was one of the first rabbinim talking about the fact that, look, after the army, instead of going to college or going back to yeshiva, many of our youth are going to India. And there are tens of thousands of Israelis that are going to India, and many of them come from religious homes. What are they looking for in India? What are they looking for outside of the official frameworks? And he said they're looking for spirituality. And he's like, this fact that they're looking for spirituality is not something that's foreign to us. Just look at Rav Kook. Rav Kook writes that as we get closer to Mashiach, we're going to have land and a country and an economy and an army. We're going to get back Nevuah. We're going to get back those spiritual experiences that exist in Tanakh that weren't really part of our life for 2,500, maybe even 3,000 years. But these things are going to slowly but surely come back. Now, if Kook traces it, Hasidus was the beginning of this. You see a movement towards spirituality, a movement towards music, a movement towards the experiential, the emotional. And Rav Kook describes that as Am Yisrael returns, these things are supposed to grow. Rav Tzvi Yehuda sort of focused mostly on Ha'am V'Ha'aretz. Those are the parts of Rav Kook that he taught. He taught Arot, which is about Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, and Zionism. He didn't really teach the parts about learning, the need to learn Kabbalah, the need to go out to the mountains and meditate. These are things that do appear in Rav Kook's writings, but they weren't taught as part of the major mainstream curriculum in Merkaz Rav during the 50s and 60s and 70s. And Shagar is like, look what's happening. the narrative of Ha'am Va'aretz, it was amazing and it worked. Look, we're here. But it's not a narrative that's inspiring people anymore. Because look at everything that's happened since Yom Kippur War. Yom Kippur War, the first Lebanon War, the second Lebanon War, the first Intifada, second Intifada, Azel, the Gush Katif. The narrative, the people that were born into that, you understand the historical significance of the states, but it's not something that you viscerally experience the same way that people like Tzvi Yehuda, people of that generation did. And therefore, for us, what should we be focusing on from Rav Kook's writings? More and more and more, we should be focusing on the spiritual, on the experiential, on trying to get back to this type of nevuah. And therefore, in his yeshiva, there was a lot of hisbodos, a lot of meditation, a lot of singing, a lot of dancing, a lot of sichot nefesh, a lot of people just sitting around in a circle and talking about their feelings, because that's a type of modality that has to be developed in order for the messianic process to continue. And obviously, you need the state, you need the people, and you need the nation, you need Eretz Yisrael, but the part we should be focusing on now is the more internal experiential part. So just read a little bit, and then we'll stop. So Rav Shagar writes as follows. This is a drasha, this is a sikha that he gave, I think it was a year or two after Gush Katif, on Yom HaTzmut. So the Yish Lahafniyim, we should internalize. Ki Torah Tavriyah, the Torah of Rav Kook, he reshit kol mapicha biyadut atzma. It is a revolution not just about Ha'am Va'aretz, it's a revolution about Judaism. V'ruchaniyut Yehudit, in spirit, the spirituality of Judaism. V'musagei Kedusha, what it means to have Kedusha. HaTorah V'mitzvah, V'odos Hashem Shal Yehudi. V'chiyu Ra'ab Ma'picha Zo Esagula Menagalos. This spiritual revolution is something that is part and parcel of the Messianic process, according to Rav Kook. Ikarash Ma'picha Na'utz B'Kedusha Hal. Rav Kook talks about finding Kedusha everywhere, finding sanctifying the mundane, finding divinity in everywhere through everything. I think that was one of the first sessions we had, etc. And if you look at the second paragraph and the third to last word of the second paragraph, it says Lamitosha Davar Hamapicha Azul Labal Kitza. And you might say the Zionist narrative in terms of getting more land and v'chule, that has bumps on the road, that has sort of stopped for us. But this spiritual revolution clearly hasn't stopped. It hasn't been exhausted. And therefore, the Torah that redeems, Torah Goelas is the names of Tzvi Yehuda's books. The Torah that redeems has not yet become, it's still moist. It's still fresh. It hasn't yet become stale. And he talks about, let's skip down. I'm running out of time. Let's skip down to the third paragraph. It says, "Barurely, it's clear to me." Shemishu alo lakum v'lomar shagam devray ila him apologetikia. You could say this is apologetics. You're like, you want to be in part of the Rav Kook world, and you don't like the Zionist narrative anymore. So, like you're saying, we should all become spiritual. And you could say that's apologetics. Well, any chashkach, but I don't think that's true. But dafka mishum sheperspektivit hagula sheli hi hagula hishit. What, when I define geula, how does it start? Not with Ha'am Va'aretz. He's like, even within Rav Kook's writings, how does it start? Personal geula. V'hi nir'etli chashuva lo pachot me'agula kalit. Karva al nafshi ge'ala. Ki kodem shi yispala al gula kalit, tzarek l'spala al gula pratit nafsha. We have to redeem ourselves individually in order for the geula kalit to actually happen. V'lo od, el b'shebesofo shal cheshbon, ha'mimush ha'miti shal gula, hino b'prat. V'chein ha'gula tatura, gula t'lomeda tora, gula b'rukhaniyot, therefore, in this time period, we should be focusing more on Gulat HaPrat, on trying to regain this spiritual connection, rather than just trying to push the Ha'am Va'aretz, parts of the Torah, because that is not going anywhere for us right now. And then he goes on to say, where is this most manifest? Ha'im al hachiru terukhaniyat, ha'shilub shal adam torah v'aret, v'tpartuyot ha'azut ha'mar shimon shal chasidut artsi yisraelit, lo ro'ilu doto halel? What is he talking about? The chasidut artsi yisraelit, the chasidization of the religious Zionist community. The fact that there's so many more people with guitars, and the fact that people are learning Sfas Emes for Night Seder instead of Gemara, and the fact that people are so much more into, you know, talking, sitting around in circles and talking about their feelings, as opposed to hovering over a Gemara. These things are part of the Messianic process. And you could trace these things to Rav Kook's writings, trace these things to Chasidus, and if Shagar spends a while as I'm doing that, because like this post-2005, post-disengagement, this is the perfect time to start focusing more on this aspect of Rav Kook's teachings, You remember he has one of these speeches. He's like, it's an open secret. Read Rav Kook's diaries. Read Nazir's diaries. They wanted to become Nevi'im. It's explicit. They wanted to have divine revelation. They wanted to become Nevi'im. He's like, that, their mission was to become Nevi'im so that they could spread it to the rest of Am Yisrael. They didn't become Nevi'im. They were zilkut to certain revelations. If you read their diaries, they're explicit. They were all the Nazir and Rav Kook. They were zilkut to certain, they felt they were sort of zilkut to certain revelations of divinity, of divine experience, whatever it is. Now is the time for us to focus on that a little bit more. So, just to close the section. So we saw that, you know, that that bumps on the road is the major way of explaining bumps on the road. Basically, the same thing happened in Mitzrayim. The same thing is happening now. But I think what's particularly fascinating about this is that when you start seeing the threads unraveling, which one do you focus on the most? Rav Tal, again, obviously he cares about Eretz Yisrael. There's no question about that. But he thinks the Todah Lu'umiyah, the national consciousness, is the most important chiddush of the last 100 years. That is the main chiddush of Rav Kook's legacy. Rav Dov Liar, at least in this one piece, says Eretz Yisrael is the most. The fact that we reconnected to the land is the most important dominant part of Rav Kook's legacy. And therefore, when the state is against the land, we're going to side with the state. We're going to side with the land. Now Shigar is like, forget all this. All this is important, but now is the time in this gap to start focusing on the spirituality, which is always there in Rav Kook's Tolat, but it was sort of not focused on as much by Rav Tzvi Yehuda, but now is the time to go back to the original sources and to start focusing on that, because that's the part that's most relevant, that's going to be most relevant for us today. And that's sort of trying to move Rav Kook's, ideas about religious Zionism into the 21st century, particularly with using Gush Katif as a test case. Thank you so much, and I hope everybody has a good night.